Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Stephen Levy, The Perfect Thing, is a work of technology journalism and cultural analysis about the Apple iPod, tracing its path from pre-launch concept to mass consumer icon. Published in the mid-2000s, the book examines the iPod not simply as a music player, but as a product that reorganized relationships among hardware design, software, music retail, personal identity, and everyday listening. Levy draws on interviews and reporting involving figures such as Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and participants in technology and music culture to explain why the device mattered at the moment it appeared. The book is also formally distinctive because its chapters are arranged in a shuffled, non-linear order, echoing one of the iPod features that shaped how people experience music. Its purpose is to show how a small consumer device became a business breakthrough, a cultural signal, and a case study in the convergence of commerce, design, and digital media. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the iPod as a product that was perfect for its historical moment. Levy frames the iPod as a perfect thing, not because it was flawless in an absolute sense, but because it arrived at a precise moment when several conditions were ready to converge. Digital music files were already circulating widely through computers and peer-to-peer networks, but the user experience was fragmented, legally uncertain, and technically awkward for mainstream listeners. Portable MP3 players existed before the iPod, yet many were limited by poor interfaces, small capacity, or weak integration with personal computers. The iPod stood out because it translated a messy technological transition into a coherent consumer experience. Its storage capacity, simple navigation, physical design, and connection to music management software made digital music feel orderly and desirable. Levy treats this as an example of timing as much as invention. The device did not create digital music culture from nothing, but it gave that culture a practical object and a recognizable public form. The book therefore emphasizes that product success often depends on matching latent demand with design clarity, not merely on being first to market. Secondly, hardware, iTunes, and the creation of a controlled digital music ecosystem. A central issue in the book is how the iPod became powerful through its relationship with iTunes, and later, the iTunes Store. Levy explains the device as part of a system rather than as a standalone gadget. The iPod stored and played songs, but iTunes organized collections, synchronized libraries, and helped users manage the growing abundance of digital files. The iTunes Store added a commercial layer by offering legal downloads at a moment when the record industry was struggling to respond to file sharing. This integration shifted the basis of competition. Apple was not only selling hardware, but also simplifying acquisition, organization, and playback within a unified environment. The result changed consumer expectations for digital commerce by making the purchase of individual tracks feel normal and convenient. At the same time, the ecosystem raised questions about dependence on Apple software and rules, especially for users who preferred open formats or alternative music management tools. Levy captures both the brilliance and the constraint of this model. Its strength lay in reducing friction, but that same control made the experience less flexible than some technology enthusiasts wanted. Thirdly, shuffle listening and the move from albums to personalized music flow. The book gives special attention to the iPod shuffle feature because it represents a broader change in listening culture. Earlier music consumption often centered on albums, radio schedules, or curated mixes. The iPod made it easy to carry thousands of tracks and move through them without a fixed sequence. Shuffle listening turned a private music library into a stream of surprises, allowing forgotten songs to reappear and unrelated genres to sit next to one another. Levy makes this idea visible not only in his analysis, but also in the structure of the book, whose chapters are intentionally arranged in a shuffled order. This formal choice reflects the argument that the iPod altered habits of attention and selection. Listeners gained more control over what they owned, yet they also welcomed a form of randomness generated from their own collections. The significance is not that randomness was technologically difficult, but that it matched a cultural appetite for mobility, variety, and personalization. The iPod helped redefine music as an individually arranged environment rather than a sequence determined by album producers, radio programmers, or record stores. Fourthly, coolness, identity, and the social meaning of a personal device, Levy treats the iPod as a cultural marker as well as a technical product. Its white earbuds, compact form, and minimal interface made it visually recognizable in public spaces, turning private listening into a visible social signal. The device suggested participation in a particular version of modernity that combined taste, mobility, design awareness, and technological ease. This explains why the book discusses identity and coolness alongside commerce. The iPod was not only useful because it played music, it also helped users present themselves as organized, stylish, and current. Its appeal depended partly on the way Apple made technology feel personal without making it look technical. The design reduced visible complexity, while the music library inside allowed each user to feel that the object reflected individual preference. Levy also notes the communal paradox of the device. It enabled deeply private listening in public, yet its shared visual language created a recognizable community of users. This dual role is important to the book because it shows how consumer electronics can become identity objects. The iPod sold convenience, but it also sold a way of being seen. Lastly, the iPod as a turning point in Apple strategy and the music industry response. The Perfect Thing places the iPod within a larger business shift for Apple and a crisis for the music industry. Before the iPod, Apple was primarily understood as a computer company with a loyal but limited user base. The device expanded the company into consumer electronics and helped make its design philosophy visible to a much broader audience. Levy shows how the iPod became a bridge between computing and lifestyle technology, preparing the ground for later Apple products built around tightly integrated hardware, software, and services. At the same time, the book describes a music industry facing the consequences of digital distribution. Record labels have been challenged by unauthorized file sharing and had difficulty building a consumer-friendly legal alternative. Apple entered that gap by offering a purchase model that was simple enough for ordinary users and persuasive enough for major labels to support. This did not solve every problem in digital music, and later streaming services would reshape the field again. Still, Levy presents the iPod era as a decisive transition from physical media and industry-controlled distribution toward portable, digital, user-managed music. In conclusion, The Perfect Thing is most useful for readers interested in technology history, Apple product strategy, digital media, and the cultural life of consumer electronics. It offers practical value for designers, marketers, product managers, and media analysts because it shows how a successful device can emerge from the alignment of usability, timing, branding, ecosystem control, and changing consumer behavior. The book is less a technical manual than a close study of how a product becomes meaningful beyond its specifications. Readers who want a critical history of the music industry will find important context. Though the book is strongest when explaining the iPod as an object that reorganized experience, rather than when offering a fully adversarial critique of Apple. Compared with broader books about Silicon Valley or biographies of Steve Jobs, Levy's work stands out because it narrows the lens to one device and uses that focus to illuminate a whole period of digital transition. Its shuffled chapter structure also makes the form part of the argument, giving the book a distinctive relationship to its subject. For anyone studying how technology can shape taste, commerce, and identity at the same time, it remains a focused and readable account of a pivotal product era. If you would like to support Stephen Levy, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.